Good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Thursday, April 9th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Emily Young.
Brighton Bush Hot Springs is set to double in size.
Democratic representatives join forces to rein in utilities' land-grabbing ways.
And in Baghdad, thousands of people turned out to throw more than shoes to give voice to their opposition to American occupation.
Portland area weather. Today, fresh green April rain most of the day, tapering to showers this afternoon, highs in the 50s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, showers from time to time, lows in the high 30s to mid 40s, much the same outlook for Friday.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Walking out in the garden, hiking the gorge, strolling through Forest Park. This is the time of year when we begin to see the world of mushrooms. Of course, they're there all the time. Some are hundreds of years old and many acres, even miles wide. But now's the time when people want to know more about these mysterious creatures. We are trying to get, and we are hoping to have Jordan Weiss, who is at Tryon Family Farm, an expert on mushrooms, to talk about a workshop that's taking place at the farm this Saturday from 2 to 5. If we're able to have Jordan a little later in the broadcast, we're going to do that. But for now, just know that there is a workshop at Tryon Farms, 2 to 5, on Saturday.
Canadian scientist and environmental activist David Suzuki is not optimistic that the world will do enough to stop global warming, but he has hope. Suzuki was in Portland yesterday for the World Affairs Council International Speaker Series. He said the intelligence that created the wonders of the modern world must now save that world as it teeters on the brink of environmental crisis.
Proponents of making Oregon a leader in controlling greenhouse gases have a new proposal before the legislature. But representatives of utilities and industry said yesterday they still don't like provisions that would put a hard cap on how much carbon dioxide and other gases can come out of their stacks without paying penalties or give the Department of Environmental Quality authority over emissions. They don't like it. The Senate Environment Committee holds a hearing today on the new version of Senate Bill 80, and legislative leaders and the governor still remain hopeful that they can get a bill passed despite opposition from the actual targets of the bill. Not likely, but we're with you all the way.
Marion County Commissioners approved major expansion plans at the Brighton Bush Hot Springs Retreat and Conference Center that may double the capacity for overnight guests. Development envisioned by the worker-owned cooperative 11 miles north of Detroit includes adding dozens of new cabins for guests and workers, opening a cafe, development of wind and solar energy projects, and organic food production in greenhouses and gardens.
And all without building a 12-lane bridge. A bill introduced by two Oregon lawmakers could alter Idaho Power's plans to build a transmission line straight through Baker County. The bill, by Democratic Representatives Brian Clem of Salem and Deborah Boone of Cannon Beach, was proposed after environmental concerns were raised over plans to build liquefied natural gas terminals on the Columbia River, and let's not forget Coos Bay as well. Among other things, the proposed bill would allow landowners to refuse to grant a utility easement rights onto their land.
Salmon boats will have to sit idle or try their luck with other species off the Oregon coast again this year. Federal fisheries managers voted yesterday to severely limit the upcoming commercial salmon season, much like they did last year. Like last year, the restrictions stem from declining runs in California's Sacramento River. The spring Chinook that leave that river system and pass under the Golden Gate Bridge make up most of the salmon caught off the Oregon coast.
Federal authorities say a fish that inhabits, Federal authorities say a fish that inhabits California's delta does not warrant protection on the federal endangered species list. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service made the announcement yesterday after a 12-month review of the longfin smelt in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. Future protection remains a possibility for the broader longfin smelt population. The fish, which only grows up to about 5 inches, is found in estuaries along the Pacific coast from the San Francisco Bay Area to Alaska. Maybe scratch the San Francisco Bay Area.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service intends to truck more than 1 million hatchery-raised Chinook salmon from Northern California to the ocean this spring. It's the second year Smoltz will make the 180-mile journey from the Coleman National Fish Hatchery in an effort to revive the state's salmon population. Wildlife officials say many of the fish trying to make their way downstream are eaten by predators or sucked into state's water pumps.
And now we have Melissa from Triune Farms to talk a little bit about mushrooms and the event on Saturday. Good morning, Melissa. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Good morning.
So I understand that Jordan Weiss of Environmentally Sustainable Technologies is doing a workshop on mushrooms at the farm on Saturday. Can you talk a little bit more about mushrooms and the role that they play in the biosphere?
Sure. The mycelial network underneath actually covers the entire globe and is sort of analogous to the neurotransmitter net that we have in our brain. It's like the connector of all aspects of life at the most basic level.
And okay, now you're scaring people.
Well, that's kind of the way it is. They're infinitely important. The mushroom is actually just the fruit of this mycelial network that runs underneath everything, extremely powerful and to be deeply valued. This workshop will actually be specifically about the King Stafaria mushroom fruit, and they'll be handing out kits so that you can do it and then also learn how to, actually you buy the kits. We will be learning how to produce them in your own garden, and they're incredibly helpful to your garden ecosystem as well as being edible and somewhat medicinal.
Do they have any utility as a bioaccumulator? There's been much talk of mushrooms as bioaccumulators.
Yeah, there have been. I actually, I'm not sure about the strength of their role in that. I'm sure they are to some degree, but you should come to the workshop and find out.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking with Melissa from Triune Farms. Thanks for that, Melissa.
Yeah, my pleasure.
In Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, a developer is seeking $25 million from the Kootenai County Commissioners and the local fire district, contending his building application was denied because of religious and racial discrimination. Haitham Judeh, owner of Jordan International Trade and Contracting in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, filed a claim against both entities on Monday.
See, that's just not right. The name of the company is Jordan, right? He could have called it Hezbollah, right? You're in trouble anyway. You're in Idaho. Supporters of paid leave for workers to care for newborns or ill family members launched a new attempt yesterday to persuade Oregon legislators that staters to become the third state to adopt such a program. Supporters are optimistic that they can win passage of this year despite continued opposition from business groups. Backers packed committee hearing on the bill and have rounded up a range of sponsors, including AARP and organized labor.
Recently, U.S. Central Command General David Petraeus said Israel may decide to attack Iranian nuclear sites. Petraeus' statement has been followed by indications of a date within the Barack Obama administration on whether Israel's repeated threats to carry out such a strike should be used to gain leverage in future negotiations with Tehran.
That is right. The world is awash in nuclear weapons, despite every nation's assurances that they are for peaceful or peacekeeping purposes. Former Soviet republics are the place to go if you are looking to pick up a few items to enhance your home arsenal. And the prices, you just can't beat those Uzbeki-used nuke dealers. President Barack Obama is now the commander-in-chief of the most heavily militarized nation history has ever seen. What do we actually know, though, about Obama's policy or even personal feelings on nuclear technology? KBOO Spencer Raymond joins us this morning to consider the implications. Good morning, Spencer.
Good morning, Chris. That is the question. We don't know yet exactly what Obama is really thinking about the whole nuclear question, but we're getting a better idea now, especially after his trip to Europe last week. He's more so than Bush did, he's pushing a stance of denuclearization, not just for other countries, but for the U.S. As well. And, Chris, I think it raises an interesting point that, okay, think about a nuclear-less world. Which country will be most powerful? Which country has the most military power? If you don't think about nuclear weapons, you already said it, it's the United States. So the United States still remains the most powerful country, even if every single nuke on the planet goes away.
But the issue, too, is, and this there has been an alarming silence from the Obama administration regarding these rogue nuclear nations in Central Asia, Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan, these places where there were arsenals, and the stuff in them is corroding. It's probably terribly defective, and a number of people in other countries are very interested in getting their hands on these old bits and pieces. I have heard nothing from the Obama administration on how to cope with this, and that would seem to be the most pressing issue. Have you?
Yeah, Chris, you're right. It is most pressing because, as you mentioned, not only are these nuclear facilities run down, they're old. I mean, they are Soviet era, as these the former Soviet states. The control with which Moscow has over these facilities is unknown, and what Moscow even knows about these is unknown. And so it's going to be a question of how well can Obama and Mendeleev work together on this to get these former Soviet sites taken care of. It's going to be Russia's going to play a big part of it. The real fear, though, is that one of these rogue states has a rogue military leader who will just, you know, do whatever he wants, and, you know, the worst-case scenario would be launching something just because they feel like it.
Or just a borderline personality disorder is all it would take.
Medvedev
seems to have very little control over Russia or much else, and Putin seems to be still pulling the strings. So basically what we're up against is what Donald Rumsfeld referred to as the unknowns that we don't know about. Anyway, thank you so much for all up, Spencer. That was, of course, KBOO's reporter, Spencer Raymond, with DC Dirt, joining us as he does every weekday morning. Thanks so much for that, Spencer.
Thanks, Chris.
A judge in New York ruled yesterday that apartheid victims who accused automakers and IBM of helping the government of South Africa engage in violent repression to enforce racial segregation in the 1970s and 80s can go to trial with their claims. U.S. District Judge Shira Schindlin rejected assertions by several countries that the lawsuits should not proceed because that might harm relations between the United States and South Africa.
And we wouldn't want that, huh?
No, we can't.
For the third time since a Pentagon policy shift, media will be allowed to cover the return of an overseas combat casualty to Dover Air Force Base. The body of Lance Corporal Blaise Oleski was scheduled to arrive at the Delaware base this evening. The Pentagon's 18-year ban on media covering the return of fallen U.S. service members to the Dover mortuary ended Sunday with the return of an Air Force staff sergeant killed in Afghanistan.
And finally, thus far this week, we have a young man shooting himself while attending a showing of the film The Watchmen. And now we have a death by sword fight. Police have charged an Indianapolis man in the death of his 77-year-old grandmother, who died after trying to break up a sword fight between him and her 69-year-old brother-in-law. Kathleen is inscrutable. This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Thursday, April 9th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Our engineer this morning is Kathleen Stevenson. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Emily Young.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up on Flashpoints, Catherine Austin Fitz predicts an unemployment rate of 19%. Nora Barrows-Friedman reports from occupied Palestine, and Kathy Kelly protests the U.S. base for drones used to bomb Iraq and Afghanistan. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ed Goldberg interviews Jane Ann Phillips about her new novel, Lark and Termite. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, Dark Horse Comics, President Mike Richardson previews the 2009 Stumptown Comics Festival, and comics artist and instructor Neil Scorpin talk about an upcoming workshop on the instant graphic novel.
Thanks for listening. Have a good day. And did we mention there are huge anti-American riots going on in Baghdad this morning?